Hey, it's Joe. On today's show, Dr. Marijn Vandelaar, a recovering insomniac, sleep therapist, and the author of How to Sleep Like a Caveman, will tell us how learning about our prehistoric ancestors' sleep can help us to relax about our own imperfect sleep. He explains that the behaviors we think of as sleep problems are actually normal, natural, and adaptive. Marijn destroys the myth that you have to get 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night and how being awake during the night is normal, and how efforts to change normal, healthy sleep into perfect sleep scores is detrimental to our health. Yeah, today's episode is not for those few lucky souls who fall asleep at the moment their head hits the pillow, cruise through the night, and bounce out of bed in the morning, ready to take on the world. Hey, good for you, but seriously, get out of here. This one is for the rest of us wise athletes who work hard to be fit and healthy, only to be undone by poor sleep. The poor sleep that slows recovery, ramps up the risk of illness, and leaves us all reaching for caffeine just to survive the day, and then something else entirely just to shut down at night and attempt to squeeze in the 7 to 9 hours into the 6 hour window available. Yeah, this talk is different. It's not a list of sleep hygiene factors and discount codes for fancy tools that work well to lighten your wallet without addressing the real reasons for poor sleep. Dr. Vandelaar says sleep is cheap and that we've all been sold a bunch of BS about sleep. This isn't about chasing perfection. It's about letting go of the pressure and easing into realistically healthy sleep, the kind of sleep our ancestors would have recognized, without the need to track every blink and breath. All right. Let's talk to Dr. Marijn Vandelaar about how to sleep like a caveman. Marijn Vandelaar, welcome to the Wise Athletes Podcast.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, hey, I hope I got your name right. That was a tough one for me.
You passed the Dutch exam.
Oh, thank you. All right. I'll search to the ends of the earth to find somebody to help with sleep issues. So I'm glad I found you. You are a sleep expert.
Yes.
Before we dive into the details of that, tell us, how did you get to be a sleep expert? What does being a sleep expert mean?
Yeah. Well, first I started off studying psychology. So I studied psychology at the University of Maastricht in Holland. And from that, I became a health psychologist. So I started treating people with anxiety and depression. After that, I specialized in sleep. I started working at a center for sleep medicine, Kempenhagen, which is also in the southern part of the Netherlands. And there I treated a lot of people with insomnia and also with other sleep problems like biological clock problems, but also nightmares, sleepwalking. And I did that for 9 years approximately. And I also finished my PhD on the treatment of insomnia during that time. So now I mainly work at the University of Maastricht. I teach general physicians about sleep problems, also companies, and I write books. So the last book I wrote was How to Sleep Like a Caveman.
Yes, I want to learn more about that, including how do we know how cavemen slept. But obviously, you know what you're talking about. I think most of the audience here are not going to be people with really serious sleep issues, you know, and insomnia, like chronic insomnia or those kinds of things. But probably everybody, me and everybody I know has some issues with sleeping. They just don't sleep as well as they used to. And everybody's got their reasons, and I'm sure you've heard them all. So today we're going to be just trying to understand kind of the scope of the problem and the things that people can do, what we can learn from cavemen that would maybe not go to the extremes of somebody who's had insomnia for 20 years, something very extreme like that. But heck, who knows? Anybody could be listening, and let's hope that everybody can get some benefit out of it. I thought we would walk through this a step at a time, and one being, let's just understand what sleep is and why it's important, and maybe even like, how come we die if we don't get sleep, and not to put too much pressure on people, because maybe they've already got too much pressure on them. My Oura Ring bothers me every day when I look at the results, and I'm going to get a hammer and smash that thing.
Yeah.
Then I thought we could talk about why do kids sleep so well compared to adults? Because I'll bet that there's some learning in there. And then we can get into the caveman thing. And then we can kind of conclude with just talking about, well, what should we do? And I think that there'll be some simple things, at least simple to understand. I think a behavior change is always hard, so I don't want to say it's easy, but simple to understand. And then maybe there'll be some harder things, you know, like solving rumination and things like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, because in the end, I think that when we have trouble sleep, falling asleep or staying asleep, there's a reason for that. And it's a good reason. The brain thinks that there's a good reason for it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel safe. It, you know, whatever is happening. And if we have just been hiding those feelings from our consciousness during the day while we're awake and alert.
Yeah, then it pops up.
And then they come to visit us at night. Yeah. Well, then you can't just medicate that away. You've got to solve that problem. And so be interested in understanding your thoughts on that.
Sure.
All right. Well, let's just dive in then. So tell us about sleep.
Yeah. Well, sleep is mainly a recovery process, and it consists of different phases. So you have what we all know is the REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, deep sleep, and also the light sleep phases. And they all have a different function. So what you see is that the deep sleep, which mainly occurs in the first 4.5 to 5 hours of the night, it is especially important for physical recovery. While the REM sleep is especially important for mental recovery, also for creativity. And you see that light sleep can also help to, if you do a power nap, for example, during the day, then it can recharge you a little bit. You get more alert. And you can solve simple problems better sometimes if you have had a short nap. So the different types of sleep all have different functions, but the main function overall is recovery. Hmm.
And so why have I heard that if you don't sleep, I know that they've done studies on rats where they force them to stay awake, they mm-hmm. die in like a week or two.
Yeah, yeah. What you see is that we don't have any experiments on people, luckily.
I'm not volunteering.
Fully deprive them from sleep. But what we do have is we have a disorder that is called fatal insomnia. And fatal insomnia is like degenerative process, like dementia. And what we see is that these people tend to sleep less and less and less until they don't sleep anymore and eventually they die. Sometimes it takes a couple of months, sometimes it takes a couple of years before they die. And it's an extreme example of how sleep is important for our functioning. Luckily, in 99.99999% of the cases, this is not the case. And eventually everybody will sleep. Although some people, they do believe that they don't sleep. They don't have fatal insomnia, but they do believe that they don't sleep. And this often has to do with perception of sleep. So that's very interesting, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. I recently heard somebody talk about a study that they had done, and they said that they lied to people. Mm-hmm. It was a sleep study, and when they woke up, they told them how much sleep they got, mm-hmm. which was a lie. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they told them they got very little, and sometimes they told them they got a lot. Mm-hmm. And the sleepiness behavior followed what they were told.
Yes.
Not what was true.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing with those trackers. You were talking about the Oura Ring. Well, first of all, it is not reliable. So it gives an estimation of different sleep phases and it gives a sleep score. And what we know is that actually there are no scientists who really know what the sleep score means because and the sleep phases, they're very inaccurate in sensing what sleep phase you have. So what we usually say is if you're a bad sleeper or if you focus too much on an Oura Ring or another sleep tracker, then it's best to really not use it anymore because it can really hamper your daytime functioning.
Yeah. Okay. I'm taking that advice right now. My ring is already off and it's not going back on.
Good. Yeah.
All right. So just to wrap up a few things, I think that the physical recovery you talked about, maybe that's related to the growth hormone.
Yeah.
That is, I think, largely produced during deep sleep.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. And then I'd heard that, and I don't know what phase of sleep, but you talked about the REM being important for the mental recovery. Mm-hmm. I'd heard that part of sleep is the stripping away of emotional content from memories.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And the REM sleep especially has a very important role in that. So what you see is that during REM sleep, you really process emotions. I mean, there are a lot of things happening during the day, and you don't always have the time to process everything, every emotion that a situation gives. So the REM sleep is like natural therapy, actually. It actually is a therapy to process your emotions that are really left, the remains of the day. And that's a wonderful function, I think. And what you see in people with insomnia, for example, is a lot of people think that insomnia itself is a problem of deep sleep. But what we now know, especially in the last couple of years, is that insomnia is especially a problem of REM sleep. And what you also see with these people who have difficulty sleeping is that they have problems during the day in like concentration, memory, but also mood swings, which is very natural if you look at it like this, if you see that REM sleep is actually very important for the processing of emotions.
Wow. And is there any truth to the what I've heard that related to the REM sleep you've said occurs at the end of the sleep? So if you are waking up early, mm-hmm. let's say you fall asleep on time or well, but you can't stay asleep, and your reaction to that is to go to sleep earlier mm-hmm. to try to give yourself more time to fall back asleep. Mm-hmm. But what you, if all you have done is you've just shifted your sleep cycle so that you're only asleep, maybe you're asleep from like 8 or 9 until 2, but then you're awake the rest of the time. Have you lost your REM sleep because you've chopped off the back half of it? Or does your body sort of balance it out eventually, and you'll have a night of nothing but REM sleep because you haven't been getting it?
Yeah, I think you're right. And if you really shorten your bedtimes for a short period, then this will have a negative effect on your REM sleep, because first of all, what will happen is your body will try to get enough deep sleep, because deep sleep is very important for direct survival, because it is mainly physical recovery. So if something bad happens, you have to have a body that quickly can react and is not ill, and muscles that are working. But after a while, if you've slept for a short time, then you get this REM rebound, especially if the first time you're in the bed for a longer time, then you get a lot of REM sleep to actually compensate for the fact that you haven't had a lot of REM sleep in the days before. So the body is always looking for a balance.
Okay. So the body will make up for it.
Yeah.
But if you're just chronically short of sleep, then you're not getting enough deep or REM sleep, probably.
Yeah, definitely. And especially if you go below the 4.5 or 5 hours for a lot of people, yeah.
Right. Yeah, okay. And you had mentioned that the light sleep is also valuable, and so that's not like wasted sleep. It's not like you want to get 50% deep and 50% REM, mm-hmm. Which my Oura Ring has told me I've never been able to do. not that I'm ever going to look at that again, but apparently the light sleep is important too.
Yeah, it is. Definitely. Yeah.
Okay. Let's move into the, why do kids tend to sleep better or at least why do adults sleep worse than kids?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the sleep of children is very different from the sleep of adults, especially young children. If you look at young children, they have a very long deep sleep and a very long REM sleep. And when we age, the mean percentage of REM sleep is about 20-25%, and of deep sleep is 20-25%. The rest is light sleep or being awake. But in children, there might be like 50% of deep sleep, depending on the age. So the thing about deep sleep is that if you're in a deep sleep, then you are not prone to wake easily. So if you have more deep sleep, then you are not prone to wake up a lot. So that might be one of the reasons. And there are also a lot of children who actually sleep badly. So that's a thing we also see in the Netherlands a lot, because in the Netherlands we have this habit of putting children to bed very early, which really lowers their tendency to sleep, lowers sleep pressure, the pressure to sleep, and that can give a lot of problems in falling asleep and maintaining sleep. So there are a lot of children actually with a lot of sleep problems, especially from the older children and the adolescents. We see an increase of sleep problems during that age.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. So this does not include my children who sleep very long and well, and lots of deep sleep. Nothing wakes them up.
Yeah.
And I'm very envious because I can remember when I was a kid, that's the way I was too. I slept great. Yeah. Now, I often stayed up late because, you know, I had lights in my eyes all night long and liked reading. I was reading science fiction all the time. And so I was interested in what I was doing and didn't want to fall. So I would, you know, essentially pass out. That's how I fell asleep, which I think has led to some unnatural desires, which is whenever I go to sleep now, my instinct is that I want to fall asleep in a second. As soon as I turn off the light, I want to fall asleep. And it's not really a desire for efficiency, although it is true. I want 9 hours of sleep in the 5 hour window I give myself, but I hate laying there not asleep, trying to fall asleep.
So, so that's a very interesting one. So what happens when you're in the dark and you cannot sleep? What do you think?
Yeah, well, so this is part of the problem is that I don't do that.
Ah, yeah.
I wait. I don't turn the light out until my eyes are heavy.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, right? I just keep staying up. Mm. Well, anyway, enough about me. Let's talk about some things which I think are different between, say, me and my children or adults and children who do sleep well. And that is that a kid is on a more regulated schedule, I think. My kids are, I was as a kid, where my parents were sick of me and they would send me to bed, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they wanted some adult time, I guess.
Yeah.
And so the kids had to go. And so I had to go to bed at the same time every single day. And then I had school or, you know, whatever. And so I had to get up around the same time every morning. You know, I didn't have stress in my life. I didn't, what would that mean? My life was so easy as a kid, you know, everything, you know, I didn't really think it was, but, you know, thinking back, those were the good old days.
Yeah.
Plus, I think is when people are younger, they make more melatonin. Plus, I was busy as heck. I mean, I was exhausted at the end of the day, really, because I was doing so much all the time.
Yeah.
But versus an adult who is sedentary, even somebody, you know, like me, I exercise a lot. Okay, well, what does that mean? Well, that means that I'm sedentary almost the entire day until I go to the gym. And then I work out really hard for an hour. Well, that's not the same thing as like being busy outside in the sun all day long.
Yeah.
So sitting, not much sunshine, I'm in sort of darkness all day and inside.
A couple of important things, I think. I think the first one has to do with the schedule. When we look at sleep in general, there are two main processes that regulate sleep. And the first one is the biological clock. And the biological clock is very much influenced by light, by temperature, but also by behavior. So if you go to bed at the same time, wake up at the same time, then our biological clock tends to react very positively. So that really can support your sleep. And the second one is sleep pressure. And sleep pressure, that's the biological urge to sleep. It's like sleep hunger. And it has to do with adenosine. So you were talking about melatonin. Melatonin is very important for the biological clock, but adenosine is very important for the sleep pressure. And those two processes work together. So the clock and the sleep pressure. And what you see in young children a lot is that they are more active. So they are more active, and being active actually builds up more sleep pressure. So that's a very important one. So you were talking about sedentary behavior that can have a negative effect on your sleep pressure. Because if you move more, if you use your muscles more, then your body will start to try to recover more. It's as simple as that. And the second thing, the biological clock, adults tend to shift a lot in their biological clock, tend to wake up in the morning very early when they have to go to work. In the weekends, they tend to shift with that. And that can have a negative effect on your biological clock. So you're mentioning a couple of factors that are really related to those two processes.
That's interesting. Yes. And I think another one, which I remember very well because I'm always, you know, I'm working on getting my children to calm down in the evening. Because, of course, I know that if they're all revved up, then it's going to be hell having them go to sleep. So a wind down is a thing that I have just started trying to do myself. But, of course, I was forced into it when I was a kid. Another thing, which you talk about adenosine, well, I've been fighting off adenosine with caffeine essentially ever since I left home to go to college. And maybe these days kids have sodas and that sort of thing. But back when I was a kid, I was not allowed to have soda very much, you know, like a glass a day or something. So I didn't have much caffeine in my blood in those days. And people, I mean, most people that I know, they're drinking coffee when they first get up in the morning,
like
they breathe air.
Yeah.
It's not even a thought of, oh, do I need coffee today?
Yeah,
do I need something to help me wake up? It's just, I just drink coffee. It's this IV drip of caffeine that we've gotten onto. And somehow that's got to be interfering with all of these processes as well.
Yeah, especially if you use caffeine too much during the evening, that can really have a negative effect on your sleep. What we also know is that if you use a lot of caffeine during the day, then the effect of caffeine during the evening might be lower because you get used to caffeine. Is that good? Well, actually, of course not, because it's like substance abuse, actually, if you use a lot of caffeine.
Yeah.
But what we do know is that recent research shows that if people drink 3 to 4 cups of coffee during the day, then you can drink one cup of coffee like 2 to 3 hours before going to bed without any negative effect on sleep. But the thing is that a lot of people are actually, as you say, using caffeine to really get themselves motivated for the day, to really get themselves awake. And I think we've all also lost the ability to wake up in a very natural way, because sleep inertia, which is the feeling that you have when you wake up in the morning, the feeling that you're still a bit drowsy, still a bit sleepy, is actually quite normal. And what we know is that what we try to say to everybody is that you have to feel awake the moment that you get out of the bed. But there are a few people who really feel really awake when they are out of the bed, because the frontal part of the brain is actually not really awake yet. And that's what is forgotten often. So we try to get this super sleep, this super being awake during the day, and sometimes it really works against us.
Oh, that is really good to know. I'll speak for myself, and I think that I speak for most people my age, is that what we want is to wake up feeling great.
Yeah.
I feel like a million bucks. That was the greatest night's sleep I ever had. That's what I want every single day.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's just not in the cards. That's not how you're supposed to wake up feeling. Maybe that's how I felt when I was 10 years old and I was getting 9 hours of sleep. It was all REM and deep sleep, 5.5 hours of deep sleep. I can see that would make me feel really refreshed, but that's not my life anymore. So maybe I'm asking for too much.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing about sleep the last couple of years, is that there's this tendency to really sleep very well without any interruptions and fall asleep within a couple of minutes, but also being awake, being refreshed constantly, performing 100% all day long. And I think that really drives us away from what sleep is actually meant to be, and how our body is made, actually, how it works.
Yeah, that sounds right. Unfortunately, sleep is, you know, you talk about pillars of health and exercise and nutrition and all of that, and rest or sleep is always one of those. And of all of the things that, of all of those pillars, sleep is the one that sort of falls into the bucket of you can't really control it. You can't just work harder to make it happen. You know, I can really bust my butt and at the gym and get stronger or do a lot of cardiovascular work and lower my resting heart rate. I mean, I can try harder on so many things, but sleep, the harder you try, the worse you do.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's what I see I saw in a lot of patients with sleep problems, is that if you ask a person who sleeps well, what do you do to sleep well? They just say, well, I put my head on the pillow and I sleep. If you ask the person with insomnia, what do you do to sleep well? They're like, I bought a very expensive pillow and I'm using this and that.
I'm taking this drug.
Spend a lot of money on everything and it just doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I know that one of the things that you say is that sleep is cheap. So I want to understand your recommendations on what we can do that doesn't involve buying expensive mattresses with temperature control and sleep trackers and stuff like that. Okay. So let's keep going and let's talk about your book, the, you know, what we learn from cavemen? And what do you mean when you talk about cavemen?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the book is called How to Sleep Like a Caveman. But of course, it's very difficult to really talk about how they sleep or how they have slept, because there are no cavemen alive anymore. So, and if you have to study sleep behavior, you have to have live people. So the book is called How to Sleep Like a Caveman, because we think that cavemen slept in the same circumstances as some contemporary tribes do. And if you look at some contemporary tribes like the Hadza tribe in Tanzania, then we can study their behavior and see what they do around sleep. And I think one of the most interesting things that I found was that being awake in itself is actually not a problem for them. So if you look at the Hadza sleep, they live in groups of 20 to 25 people. And if you look at a regular night, then you see that less than 1 minute per night, everybody's sleeping at the same time. So someone is always awake during the night. There's always someone awake during the night, which is actually it's a very high evolutionary purpose, because if we are sleeping, then you're not able to react very spontaneously or quickly. So if there's danger around you, then it's very good that you have a tribe member that's awake when you are sleeping. It's a sense of safety.
Sure. Well, let me ask you about that, because they're not coordinating that, I assume, you know, with alarm clocks and things like that. No. They just, people are up enough that it just happens that there's always somebody up.
It's always somebody awake. And we think that older sleep, so aging, actually has a very important purpose in that. So if you look at aging people, then they lose their function of hunting and gathering, because they are less flexible, or they can walk less long. And what you see is that they actually have a new function of being the guards of the night. So sleeping more lightly when you age is actually very important for the safety of the rest of the tribe.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's an evolutionary theory. And another thing is very important is that there are differences in chronotypes. So you have morning people, so you have evening people, and everything in between. So because a lot of people are awake at a certain point in the night or in the early morning, there is not as much time that people are sleeping all at the same time. So it's less than 1 minute per night. Yeah. So that's very interesting. And they're awake for 2.5 hours on average. 2.5 hours.
That's shocking.
Yeah. But they don't sense it as a problem. They don't see it as a problem. So if you ask them, how do you see being awake during the night? They're like, I'm just asleep or I'm awake. It's not a problem. And I think in modern society, in our society, we have learned that you have to sleep quickly, you have to sleep without interruptions. But there is no research that having interruptions during the night actually causes, for example, physical problems. There is one thing that has been researched. It has to do with very short micro arousals. So the arousals that you don't even sense. Mm-hmm. And this is actually connected to mortality and physical problems. But being awake during the night in itself does not have a connection with mortality or chronic disease.
So are you referring to like sleep apnea, where you're waking up frequently and you don't remember it, you just know you don't sleep well for whatever reason? That can cause health issues. But just waking up at 2 a.m. and you're awake until 3 and you fall back asleep, that doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter. There's no research supporting that has a negative effect on your health. And this is a fear of a lot of people with insomnia, that they are going to die sooner, that they are going to develop chronic disease, and there's no research supporting that.
How interesting. Yeah, we put ourselves under a lot of pressure for getting really good sleep, and that is the one thing we cannot tolerate, is this pressure to sleep perfectly. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about sleep efficiency. That's like the number one metric. And my interpretation of what you're saying is that you should never look at that. That's stupid.
Well, you could look at that if you have, I mean, if you're just awake and you're just feeling calm and you don't have any stress or you're not anxious, then it's no problem to be awake during the night. That's what I'm saying. But if you're awake, like in the case of insomnia, and you feel stressed out, then this takes up a lot of energy because your night's rest is not night's rest anymore, because you're terrified during the night and your heart rate goes up. And then it might be important to lower the time that you are awake during the night. And this is where sleep restriction comes in and shortening the time in bed. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll get into the what we can do here in just a bit, because I think that ultimately is what we're after, mm-hmm. is what can we do? But as I go back to thinking about the difference between the kid's sleep and the adult sleep, and the kid is a busy, busy, busy outside doing stuff all the time. Anyway, that was me as a kid. Mm-hmm. And the adult is inside. And so we're not building up the same sleep pressures. And so we have... It seems to me that one of the problems that adults have is that we're in a position where our rhythms are dysregulated, mismatched. You know, we're eating late and having lights in our eyes late, and didn't get bright lights in our eyes early in the morning. So mm-hmm. our circadian rhythms are not set very well. Plus, mm-hmm. we're changing our schedule all the time. You mentioned all these things. What that makes us is more vulnerable to little things mattering.
Yeah.
And so when we, talk about, cover your eyes or have a blacked out room or temperature, get that cooler or, all the things that we do, those things don't matter to a kid because the kid has so much sleep pressure that they don't care. They fall asleep wherever.
Yeah.
But the adult who is doing everything wrong, these little things do actually matter. But ultimately, I think that the answer is to get the big things right.
Yeah.
So anyway, before we move into the what you can do, mm-hmm. what else can you tell us about the Hadza? So how much sleep are they getting? Are they getting 8 hours a night?
No. They're sleeping around 6.2 to 6.5 hours per night.
Well, why do people tell me to get 8 hours?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's a big myth that also puts a lot of pressure on people. There are people who need 8 hours, but if you look at the general population, then you see that 25% of it, no, actually 10 to 25% of people get 8 hours or more. So it's not an average that we see in the general population. And also, we see that getting less than 8 hours is not related to also mortality or chronic disease. A person who sleeps for 5.5 hours actually dies just as soon as a person who sleeps for 8 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is also an eye opener. And I think that the 8 hour myth stems from Robert Owen, who was a social reformer in Wales. And he said that there were a lot of people at that time working like 16 hours a day. And he said it's better if you sleep for 8 hours, rest for 8 hours, and work for 8 hours instead of working for 16 hours. And that 8-8-8 message has been repeated often and is still in our minds, while it puts a lot of pressure on the bad sleepers.
Okay. All right. So that was just made up because it was a convenient fraction and repeated for 150 years. And that's why we all believe it. But the thought, the information that you just shared of a person sleeping 5.5 is got the same all cause mortality as a mm-hmm. person sleeping 7 or 8, you said, that really, if that doesn't take the pressure off, then nothing can. So that's really great to know. Mm-hmm. So what else? So the Hadza are sleeping, say, 6 to 6.5.
Yeah.
They don't sleep straight through the night. They are up for a couple hours. I guess they don't have TVs or, lights to read their science fiction novels. So if they wake up in the middle of the night, which they do, then they just lay there and relax or chat with their buddy or whatever.
Yeah, they're lying on a mattress with a whole family, like 5 or 6 people, and then one person wakes up, and then they're just lying awake and quiet, or they're talking with somebody around them, so it's just being awake is actually part of the night.
Yeah, and then do they do some? I assume that there's some kind of a what we'd call in the modern world a wind down, but for them it's just I'm not walking the savannah hunting mm-hmm. for honey or whatever, just sitting there, maybe in front of a fire.
Yeah.
And, I'm getting my body to transition from being alert and awake and active to being ready to fall asleep.
Yeah. They're telling stories. They're just sitting around a campfire and they're telling stories to each other that are usually not very emotional, but more like storytelling, like maybe the fantasy kind that you, the stories you read as a kid. And that helps them to relax and to make a transition towards sleep. And then there's also, because some people say, well, chronotypes are something that we invented as a modern person. But I mean, you see chronotypes there. You see that some people go to bed very early and are awake very early, and some people go to bed very late. So they're the last ones to sit around the campfire.
Ah, okay. I'm going to stop saying that chronotypes are made up. Because I have been saying that. But it turns out that even the Hadza have chronotypes.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
That's really great. Okay. All right. Well, that is really interesting. So let's get into with the time that we have left. What can we take away from all of this? You know, what can we learn about what psychiatrists like yourself who have focused on, issues related to sleep and studying the Hadza, what can we learn about what should a modern human who, is tempted to buy expensive tools because they're not sleeping well, what should they do to help themselves? And I suppose, at the extreme end, they need to get professional help.
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing you it's very important is to lower your expectations and to really see what a natural sleep is. I think we've lost touch with what natural sleep is, that being awake in itself does not have to be a problem, but it depends on how you are awake. If you're awake and stressed out, then that's not a good sign, because your night's rest will not be a night's rest. So you have to do something about that. Now, the first thing, if you're feeling restless during the night, if you're not able to be awake quietly during the night, and the first thing that's very important is not look at the alarm clock. What we know from research is that it takes more than 20 minutes more to fall back asleep if you just watch the time. Jeez. So it's very important to not watch the time during the night. Yeah. So that's the first one. The second one, I think, is to what I saw a lot in a lot of people with sleep problems or who had problems falling asleep or maintaining sleep, is that they actually tended to go to bed earlier and to be in the bed for a longer time. And this actually decreases this adenosine, which has a negative effect on your sleep. It creates more time of being awake and worrying. So the main thing is to do is actually the opposite. So to really decrease the time in bed if you're feeling anxious when you're awake. And how do you do that? By looking at the time that you think you were sleeping on average the last week. For example, if you think that you've slept for 6 hours last week and you were in the bed for 9, then you get this number 6, because that's what you slept, and you add half an hour, and that's your new total bedtime. So it's 6.5.
So I start with my when I know I have to wake up, and then I back 6.5 hours.
Yeah, you can do it like that. But if you're awake very early, sometimes people are very awake very early, then sometimes this window might shift a little bit. So you really look at the time that's really according to your own chronotype. So some people are extreme morning people, and they tend to be in the bed for a long time in the morning. And then sometimes it helps to really get out of the bed earlier in these people. So it depends on what chronotype you are. Now, it's very important, if you shorten your bedtimes, to not go below 5 hours, because if you go below 5 hours, then this might affect your deep sleep. This is what you don't want, because then you're getting sleepy during the day, you get groggy, and you might, if you have to drive a car, then this might give problems or maybe accidents on the long run. Right. So it's very important to not do that, not go below 5 hours. And then what usually happens is that after a couple of days, the first days are very hard. People get more sleepy during the day. Sometimes they get headaches. That's because the body has to adjust to these shorter bedtimes. But usually after a week or so, after 4 to 7 days, you see that the sleep actually improves, and that the being awake in the bed is getting less. And then after 2 to 3 weeks, actually most people are satisfied with a new sleep schedule. So within 2 to 3 weeks, you can actually have a large effect on how you're sleeping and decreasing the time that you're awake and stressed out.
Hmm. Interesting. So this is all relates to sleep pressure.
Yeah.
Feeling tired, feeling sleepy.
Feeling sleepy, yeah.
When you go to sleep, you want to feel sleepy and not lay there stressing about not sleeping while at the same time losing some of your adenosine, which is making you less sleepy.
Yeah. So you get this vicious circle.
Yeah. All right. So don't look at the clock. I think we've said in the past, don't do sleep trackers. Another thing that for the sleep pressure idea, I wonder if, you know, getting more sunshine, getting more exercise might help to increase sleep pressure. Is that ever recommended?
Yeah, exercise can help to increase sleep pressure. That's definitely true. Getting more sunshine or being more outside in the morning actually has the largest effect on the other system, which is the biological clock, which can really support your sleep. So that's also a recommendation to get early sunlight or early outside light, because that's much stronger than the light you get when you're in a room. Yeah, definitely.
Good. And then do you ever talk to people about trying to not have the house bright in the evening or on electronic devices or things like that?
Yeah. So it's very, very important to dim the lights, especially ambient light is very important. So the light around you, while the light of screens, especially if you look at your mobile phone, for example, then the light is, I mean, it is bluish, but it is so low in emission, because if you're using it like a smartphone and use it in a regular way when you're in the bed, then you might get like 3 to 5 lux, which is nothing. If you go outside and it's a very gray day, you get 10,000 lux. So it might be bluish, the device, but the problem with the devices is not the light. The problem with the devices can be that you are too active on the device.
Yeah, it's very interesting or stressful or...
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Okay. All right, good. All right. And I guess that, you know, you talked about the two different systems that sort of work together to help us sleep. Getting these things aligned seems to be worth figuring out, you know, and maybe it's a little different for everybody. And certainly their environment is different, but not snacking too late. Or I know for a fact, if I ever did like racing in the evenings, I slept badly that night. I just couldn't relax.
Yeah. So if you're too active, it might hamper your sleep, the transition from wake to sleep. Yeah.
So I think that the last thing about the things that we could do, that as I've listened to you and read about this problem in the past, it occurred to me that, and it's happened to me too, where I'll have thoughts that intrude in my ability to sleep, where, you know, I'm trying to sleep and maybe I'm almost asleep, and then I'll think of something that, I forgot to take care of that thing.
Yeah.
Or just I'm thinking of a scenario at work over and over again, wondering, could I have said that a little better, or, you know, some stupid thing like that. I mean, it's not stupid. My brain thinks it's important, and so it's important. I have to deal with it. The problem was that I haven't dealt with it while I was awake. So now it is intruding on my efforts to sleep. So what do you recommend to people who've got these, you know, psychological or emotional issues that are interfering with their sleep? And it's not that the sleep problem is not really a sleep problem. It's, you know, you've got a life problem that you're not dealing with.
It's a rumination problem also, yeah. I think you're saying it quite clearly, is that for a lot of people, when they are in the bed and it's dark and they don't have any distractions, then it's actually the first time for a lot of people that they really have the time and the environment to think in. And I think one of the first things I usually say is there a time in the evening, in the early evening, that you can make free to just sit down and just think what is coming up right now, and are there things that are really bothering me or that are influencing me, and just take these 15 to 20 minutes for yourself to write it down in a booklet. That might help. That's the first thing. I think the second thing is that, especially during the night, we know that the frontal lobe, so the frontal part of the brain, is actually shut down a little bit. So what we know is that there is less control over your thoughts, which can sometimes have a positive effect. So if you're an artist or if you make paintings, then you can make wonderful things during the night. But if you're stressed out, then you might be creative in a negative way because there's no control, there's less control. That's why a lot of problems when you wake up during the night are much bigger than they are during the day. Sometimes people wake up in the morning and say, oh, what was I thinking about last night? So that's this thing that has to do with our frontal lobe. And I think that one thing that people often do is that they try to not think about something. But the thing is, if you're not trying to not think about something, the thing gets bigger. So that's how it works, right? So if you're not trying not to think about a pink elephant for the next couple of seconds, then this pink elephant will just pop up. But also if you try to think about something else forcefully, then this also might have a negative effect on, because your mind tends to go back to the things that bother you. And what I usually do is I do a mindful exercise. So mindfulness exercise with people, also in my trainings, in which I teach them to really follow their thoughts and not trying to change them. Because if you try to change your thoughts, then they actually get worse usually. So this mindfulness exercise, I usually ask people to close their eyes and to let all their thoughts in. So everything that you're thinking right now, just let it in and look at all the thoughts that are coming in and try to observe. And now I sometimes say, okay, you're doing this right now. Now pretend that you're in a train station looking at a train and the train passes by. And every next thought you get, put it in another, how do you say it in English?
Car. Bay.
Yeah, another car. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So in the next car. So every thought you get, you put it in the next car. You try to observe everything you're thinking about, letting the train pass by. And actually, now you're doing something that is very natural to us. Thoughts come and go. Thoughts come and go. Instead of trying to control the thoughts. And this exercise, I usually start with that, trying to do that during the day and then try to do that during the night. And for a lot of people, that gives a lot of relief.
That's interesting. It's sort of anti-meditation.
Yeah.
But it's for a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You're not trying to, actually, even in meditation, you're not trying to think of nothing. You're just trying to let thoughts go.
Yes.
But in this case, we're actually allowing the thoughts to come and mm-hmm. we just follow them along. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to let them go at first, but eventually we do then end up trying to put them away one after another once we've given them a chance to have their say.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so I got to ask this last thing here before we wrap up, and that would be sleep aids, chemical sleep aids. I mean, probably, you know, of all of the supplements mm-hmm. on the market, sleep aids have got to be up there. Melatonin mm-hmm. and people take Benadryl and all kinds of, you know, GABA and Ambien, you know, different prescription things.
Mm-hmm.
Magnesium is supposed to help you to fall asleep. Glycine. Do you ever recommend any of these things?
Well, I think melatonin can sometimes help, but melatonin only helps if there's a problem with the biological clock, because melatonin has to do with the biological clock. So if you have problems in your rhythm, some adolescents have problems falling asleep at night. So they're very late falling asleep and have problems going to school in the morning because they're too sleepy to wake up.
Yeah.
And sometimes in this case, melatonin can help. But usually when you're just when you're suffering from insomnia or have problems maintaining sleep or initiating sleep in general, then melatonin actually does not have a place for improving those problems. For example, jet lag disorder. If you have a jet lag and you travel to the east, melatonin can help. But those are actually in Holland, in the Netherlands, we said that those are the only indications to use melatonin based on research. Okay. Now, if you look at the other things like Benadryl, Benadryl is an antihistaminicum, which has a side effect of being more sleepy. The thing about Benadryl is if you use it a lot, then your body gets used to it. So you might need to take more. And when you take more, you might get more side effects like a headache or dizziness or sleepiness during the day. So mm-hmm. Benadryl is not a long-term solution. Now, if you look at Ambien, which is called Zopiclone, Zolpidem in the Netherlands, Z drugs, then you see that this has a negative effect on your sleep structure. So what these medications, sleep medications, actually do is they decrease your deep sleep. They decrease your REM sleep. And what you see is that you get this light sleep during the night, which actually contains no recovery sleep anymore. So this has a negative effect on how people function, and it might have a very negative effect on health on the long run. So I think it's very important to not use sleep medications if you're suffering from sleep problems, and not as a first solution. If you try the behavioral things, if you've sought like medical attention, then that's a different thing, but not the first step.
All right. That sounds sensible. All right, Brian, tell our audience how they can find your book, find more information about what you teach.
Yeah. So the book is called How to Sleep Like a Caveman. And I think it's, well, next month it's going to be published in the United States. It has been published in the UK, Italy. It's been published. It's going to be published in 21 languages. So it's a large part of the world. So next month, Spanish is going to be there.
Congratulations.
So that's good news. So How to Sleep Like a Caveman, you can order it at Amazon. And if you want to know more, then you can find my website, which is called marijnvandelaar.com. I think I have to send that address to you, because I think...
Yes. I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, that's good. So you can find me there. And there's also an email address in which you can contact me.
Awesome. Well, that's great. Hey, thank you very much. I have learned a lot.
Thanks.
All right. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you so much for joining my talk with Dr. Marijn Vandelaar. I hope you get the benefits to your sleep that I am slowly getting with mine.